brings us a message this evening. I know he will appreciate your kind attention, your silent prayers as he brings us what is written on his mind and on his heart this evening. Brother Bob.
Can you hear me now? Yay. Sorry about that. Yes, I didn't turn it on. Good evening, though. It's good to see you all. And this is going to be a New Year's sermon. It's the first sermon of the year, so it seemed natural. And it's that time of year, it's that all the businesses, they go through their books, and they look and they sometimes they'll close for a day for inventory, and they'll count all the things they have on the stock, on their shelves, and look at their records and see, well, how many of these things did we sell, and how many of those things didn't we sell, and what are we going to do with all these leftover stuff? But they have to balance their books and get ready for the new year and try and project the things that they want to do differently. And for their business. And it's also a good idea, I think, for us to do that occasionally in our spiritual life. Take a spiritual inventory of where we're at. It's easy sometimes to get into a rut, into a routine, where we do the same thing always because we've always done the same thing. And we get comfortable with that, and so there are times when we have to. Well, I feel like it's wise for us to question, where am I at spiritually, and what can I do differently? So I had some thoughts about some questions for us to ask ourselves to do a spiritual inventory. And a lot of times I stand up here and I'll ask a question and I'm expecting an answer. But these are, I'll be honest with you, these are probably going to be more of rhetorical questions for you to answer in your heart and in your mind. Because some of them are kind of weighty. They can't be answered with a quick yes or no. Because we're not talking about how many widgets did we sell or how many, what are we going to do for our temporal existence. It's about spiritual things and important things. So the first thing that I feel like we should do is look back over the last year or two and kind of ask yourselves, well, how am I doing? Honestly. Sometimes it's like I said, we get busy and we start. You get so focused on, well, I got that done, but the next thing is right there, and I got to work on that, and that's the next thing, and then I got to work on the thing after that. But we have to stop and take a breath and look at ourselves and ask ourselves, does God consider us a good and faithful servant? Can we look in the mirror and, In the scriptures, when it talks about that servant that's been working in the vineyard, and the master has given him those talents, and when he returns, those are the words that, well done, good and faithful servant, enter into your rest. Does God consider us that? We know ourselves better than anyone else. Because we know our failures. We understand those things that others may not see. The thoughts of our mind, the struggles, the temptations that one person may have but the other person doesn't. And that's one of those hard things for us to do as humans, because it requires some humility and some honest introspection, and sometimes our pride gets in the way because we don't, it's work. It's hard to ask yourselves those questions. We have to ask ourselves, does God consider me a good and faithful servant? Am I growing or am I stagnant? Can I look back over the last year and say, yeah, I think I'm spiritually stronger? Or do I look back and say, well, then I went another year. Pretty much the same as the last 3 before that, or 10 before that. Nothing's really changed. You know, I think it's dangerous for us to become stagnant in our spiritual life. When we get into that comfort zone, where we're in a routine and everything's just going along. And that's, you know, routines aren't bad. They help us remember things. But sometimes they take away the automaticity that's automatic about some things we do, as opposed to taking the careful time to consider why we do them and having the real meaning behind it. Am I growing, or have I become stagnant? Am I just treading water? Am I just taking, you know, I got my space in the pew, it's all reserved, got my name on it, I sit there every Sunday. But am I growing? Is my time improved? Another thing we have to question is have I been a witness? You know, we when we get baptized, we make a promise to God that we're going to stand as a witness at all times, in all places, in all things. Sometimes we have to ask ourselves, how have I done? Kind of look back at those times at work or at school that I was able to stand as a witness. The times in the grocery store when we have an opportunity standing next to somebody in line. We enter into conversation with them. Or, you know, just our daily interactions with the checkout person. Do we witness what God's done for us? How blessed we truly are. Have I been a good steward? You know, we've been given things. Have I taken good care of them? Have I taken good care of my time? It was interesting as I get this blog, internet, I guess it's kind of like a newsletter. Comes periodically, 2 or 3 times a week, and it's got different themes and different ideas in it, you know, just most of them are intended to, you know, improve your character or your walk. This last week had one. It was interesting, and the title of it was it was basically a little booklet that had been published in 1910, and the whole booklet was in this little blog, and it was how to live on 24 hours a day. We always, you know, and it was interesting because he took the concept of, you hear all these books about, well, I can live on $10 a day, or all this time, or all this monetary amount that you can live on. Well, I can make this $10 last this long. I can do this much with it. But it's the same concept with our time. Are you living 24 hours a day, or are we just existing? Have we just taken one day and pretty much not improved it? Not taken a part of that and said, how have I improved my spiritual walk? And gotten the best out of that. The biggest return on the investment of my time. You know, when the master gave the talents to his servants, you know, he expected them to use them and increase them. The thing about time is, it doesn't matter how much money you have or don't have, everybody has the same amount of time. It's really amazing. But do we use our time that improves our spiritual walk? Or do we just fill it with filler to entertain us, to keep us distracted so we don't have to think about all of the problems we have? Or do we take the most out of it? To get the most out of the time that we've been given. Have I been good steward of the talents and abilities that we've been given? We've all got different strengths and weaknesses. Have I been a good steward of those things? Have I used them for? Have I used my powers for good? You know, like the superheroes of the imagination of a lot of comic books. Oh, I use my powers for good. Well, we have abilities and they're not the same. Do we use them for good or do we use them for our own selfishness? For our own gratification? Have I been a good steward of my treasure? The financial blessings that God's given us. You know, he expected from his servants an accounting of what he had given them. And, you know, have I taken what he's given me and have I used it for his benefit? Is the world changing me or am I changing the world? And we all interact with the world. And, you know, and I'm speaking to some people who have some life experience. We were watching, Liza and I, last night, watching a PBS documentary about the Dust Bowl. And it was, you know, it was interesting. But for the people that went through it, I can't imagine it. The eight years of dust storms that just destroyed everything. And they, you know, they couldn't get a crop to grow. And, you know, what that did to the families, what it did to the towns, what it did to the people. And we look at the world today and it's changed so much. From that time, even in the lifetimes of many of you here, but we have to make sure that the world, if it's changing for the worse, is it changing us too? Or am I trying to change the world that I interact with? Do I have a positive influence on those around me, or are those around me influencing me? Am I being pulled down to the level of the world? Do I look and act the same as everyone around me, or am I different? You know, and it's one of those times when we can look and ask ourselves, well, what have I learned from my mistakes in the past? Because we've all made them. Can we look back and say, I've learned something from my mistakes? Or did I just endure them? And, you know, I hope I learned. Or sometimes I think we need to make a conscious effort to learn. To what have I learned? What have I learned about right or wrong? About people, about God? By making mistakes. And what am I doing now to avoid them? And, you know, and we look back, but at the same time, we have to look at our time right now that we're at and ask ourselves, what am I doing? What am I personally doing for God right now? am I done? Or I'll wait till I'm later. What am I doing right now? If we wait on someone else to do what God expects us to do, it may never get done when He's given us things to do. Do I support the work of the gospel? Not just financially. And not just in foreign lands. The work of the gospel is right here too. It's in this room. It's in our families. It's in those we interact with. It's in our work at school. That's where the work of the gospel is too. Do I know how to share my faith? Or is it something I know I'm supposed to do, but I don't really know how? And if I don't know how, what am I going to do to figure it out? What are my resources? Does fellowship of others in the world mean more to me than fellowship with God? You know, where is my relationship with God and my relationship with everyone else? Where is it? And you know what? We look at ourselves now, but we also have to look towards our future. Where do I want to be? Spiritually. What kind of a spiritual life do I want? What kind of blessings do I want from God? Where would I like to be spiritually next year at this time? Stronger? Closer to God? And not just individually, where we want our local to be spiritually a year from now. And what are we going to do to get it there? Those are the kinds of things that, you know, are uncomfortable sometimes to think about because they don't come with a quick answer. But if we don't spend some time in thinking about them, and we finish up here and I get done and we visit after church, and then that's the last time it's thought of for a year. Whoever's preaching the first sermon of next year, 2015, scary to think about, it'll be here. Can be asking the same questions again. And have we just existed for another year? Or did we grow? There's lots of things in our spiritual life I think we can look at. But I would like to focus on one tonight. I think if we only do one thing over the coming year, that we should be able to devote more time in prayer and devote ourselves to it. You know, I think there's two kinds of prayer. There's the prayer where we get together or even by ourselves, and we kneel down, and we close our eyes, bow our head. And we utter words. And they come from our heart. Or or even silently in our minds. And we spend time in prayer that way. But I also think that there's part of us that can be poured out to God continually. A continual communion with Him. Conversation with Him. But, you know, in our lives, we're pretty busy. We have errands to run. We have work to do. We have kids to raise, children to beat, correct, children to feed, bills to pay. All those things happen in our life. And which is more likely in our life? Are we going to say no to doing something because it would cut into the time we've set aside for prayer? Or we'll skimp on the prayer side to go ahead and fit that into our day? How important do we make it? You got a lot of things going on, so I'll have to keep my prayers just, you know, brief when I go to bed. And which is more likely in our life? Well, so why should we be devoted in our prayer? Well, first of all, it's our duty. I'd like to turn to Alma, chapter 16, very familiar scripture, I'm sure. Be on page 429 if you're following along. It's our duty to be devoted in prayer. This is Amulek speaking to the Zoramites who had been kicked out of their synagogues because of their poverty. It says, therefore, I'm starting with verse 218. Therefore, may God grant unto you, my brethren, that you might begin to exercise your faith unto repentance, and that you begin to call upon his holy name, that he would have mercy upon you. Yea, cry unto him for mercy, for he is mighty to save. Yea, humble yourselves, and continue in prayer unto him. Cry unto him when ye are in your fields, yea, over all your flocks. Cry unto him in your houses, yea, over all your household, both morning, midday, and evening. And I don't necessarily think that means we just got to do it three times a day. He's talking about all the time. Yea, cry unto him against the power of your enemies. Cry unto him against the devil, which is an enemy of all righteousness. Now, he covers a lot there about what we're supposed to pray over. Our work, our families, continually, and for his mercy and for his forgiveness. Continuing on, verse 220, cry unto him over the crops of your fields that ye may prosper in them. Cry over the flocks of your fields that they may increase. But this is not all. You must pour out your souls in your closets and your secret places and in your wilderness. And I like the phrase he uses, to pour out our souls. Because it reminds me of Jay's sermon at the reunion when he talked about the high priest when he made that sacrifice of the bullock or the ram, whatever it was, and he uses a knife and it pierced his heart of the animal, and the blood of the animal poured out onto the altar. You know, it was giving its life. It was giving everything. And, you know, that's not the way that, you know, the law of Moses is fulfilled. But that same kind of imagery is what God expects spiritually from us, to pour out our hearts, to empty them, to lay them at his feet partiality or just not, without holding anything back, but just open it up to him. And when you do not cry unto the Lord, let your hearts be full, drawn out in prayer unto him continually, for your welfare and for the welfare of those that are around you, for each other. We're all in this together. We're all in the battle. We're all fighting against the adversary. We gotta take care of each other. We're supposed to be helping each other. You know, this is one of the things that I feel that I am as weak as anybody else at. Last Sunday, I made a mental note. If you like me, my mental notes, I make them, and then I can't find them when I need them. But I couldn't help but notice that it's been a while since we've seen the Shaws in church. And I made a mental note. You know what? Monday, I'm gonna call up Randy and Debbie and see how they're doing. Haven't heard them for a while. You know what? Monday got busy, and I forgot. And then it was Wednesday night, and I was sitting here, and it's like, oh, I forgot. Thursday, I'm going to give them a call. Just touch base, just to see how, let them, because I want to communicate my love for them. You can probably imagine what happened. Got busy. Forgot. That's my weakness. That's my failure. But it's also a commandment that I need to work on. Because we are a strength for each other. We're supposed to be praying for the welfare of those that are around us. But getting back to, you know, devoting ourselves more in our prayer life, you know, why we do it? Because it's a commandment. It's our duty. It's what God expects of us. Now, you know, and for one instance, Paul is brief and to the point when it comes to prayer. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 17. Short and sweet. Pray without ceasing. I don't think Paul ever said anything as succinct and to the point as that. But it's our duty to pray without ceasing. And that's hard because our mind gets full of other things. But we gotta take that effort to focus it. Another reason to be devoted in prayer, I believe, can be found in the book of Enos, in the Book of Mormon. It'll be on page 194. I'll just start with the first verse of the first chapter, the first and only chapter of Enos. It says, "Behold, it came to pass that I, Enos, knowing my father that he was a just man, for he taught me in his language and also in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And blessed be the name of my God for it. And I will tell you of the wrestle which I had before God before that I received a remission of my sins. Behold, I went to hunt beasts in the forest, and the words which I had often heard my father speak concerning eternal life and the joy of the saints and the words of my father sunk deep into my heart. And my soul hungered. And I kneeled down before my Maker and cried unto Him in mighty prayer and supplication for mine own soul. And all the day long did I cry unto Him. Yea, and when the night came, I did still raise my voice high, that it reached the heavens. And there came a voice unto me, saying, Enos, thy sins are forgiven thee, and thou shalt be blessed." The reason we should be devoted in prayer is because God hears us and we need to hear from God. God hears our prayers, and there's a ton of scriptures that reference it. We don't do it out of routine. We do it out of a relationship. If I never spoke to Liza, what kind of a relationship would we have? wouldn't be good. You know, God wants a relationship with us. It means we got to talk to Him so He can talk to us. If we're not talking to Him, there's no relationship, there's no communication. I want to also turn into Psalms, the 34th chapter. One of my more favorite Psalms. And I was reading it this afternoon, you know, trying to pick out, you know, those parts that I really wanted it to use it, but I couldn't help but I couldn't cut it down any. So I'm just gonna read the whole thing. It says, verse 1, I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord, and humble shall hear thee. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad. O magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt His name together. I sought the Lord, and He heard me, and delivered me from all my fears. When we seek Him, He hears us and answers. They looked unto Him and were lightened, and their faces were not ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. The angels of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear Him and delivereth them. O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in Him. O fear the Lord, ye His saints, for there is no want to them that fear Him. The young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing. Come, ye children, hearken unto me, and I will teach you the fear of the Lord. What man is he that desireth life and loveth many days, that he may see good? Keep thy tongue from evil, and thy lips from speaking guile. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and His ears are open unto their cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry, and the Lord heareth, and delivereth them out of all their troubles. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth them out of them all. He keepeth all his bones, not one of them is broken. Evil shall slay the wicked, and they that hate the righteous shall be desolate. The Lord redeemeth the soul of his servants, and none of them that trust in him shall be desolate. Now, numerous times through that psalm, it talks about how the Lord's ears are open and He answers. And He wants to be there and to bless at all times. That's why we need to be devoted and diligent in our prayer life. Another reason to be devoted is found in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. I'll just start with the first verse again. It says, Moreover, brethren, I would that you should not be ignorant how that our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea. And this he's talking about the Israelites when they came out from Egypt and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and the sea, and did all eat that same spiritual meat, and all did drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them, God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things were our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted, neither be idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and to drink, and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication as some of them committed, and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happened unto them for examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the worlds are come. So he's going, all these things, all these people experienced the same things. They all experienced the manna. They all experienced walking through the Red Sea on dry ground. They experienced those things. But even with that, they were tempted by these things. They were all temptations. Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth, take heed lest he fall. There hath no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way of escape, that ye may be able to bear it. One of the reasons we need to pray is to have strength to endure our temptations. You know, it's a lot like being in a burning building. If you're in a burning building, well, or a structure that's on fire, a big commercial structure, what are you going to find almost anywhere in that structure is the fire alarm's going off? What are you going to look around for? This isn't one of those rhetorical questions. An exit sign. Just exactly like we got right there. They're required to have them, right? Now, is that exit sign helping me if I don't do anything about it? Nope. We can be in the middle of a temptation and say, Lord, I'm tempted. Help me find a way out. And it's like being in that burning building and we're about to get hurt. And Lord, help me. Oh, there's an exit sign. All I got to do is walk out that exit. But I still have to choose to walk out that exit. And it's just like that it says right there in the 13th verse. You will not, with the temptation also make a way to escape. There is a way out of it. And not every temptation comes with a warning label. You know, sometimes we're in the situation before we realize it. But when we realize it, we still have to be in a position to be talking to our God, to recognize it. Another reason to be diligent in our prayer life, to be devoted, can be found in Matthew chapter 26. I'll start with the 36th verse. So then cometh Jesus with them into a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto the disciples, Sit ye here while I go and pray yonder. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then saith he unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. And he went a little farther, and fell on his face and prayed, saying, Now, that's an important illustration. He fell on his face. He's admitting how heavy he feels, how sorrowful, to the point of just of collapse. Oh, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. There in the 42nd verse, it's similar, but it says, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done. We have to overcome our own wills. Right there it's telling us that Jesus didn't necessarily want to go to the cross. He knew what it was going to be like. Humanly speaking, he did not want that. But he was willing to submit his will. For me, naturally, I don't want to do some of the things that God tells me to do. I don't want to turn the other cheek. But he commands me to. I don't want to love my enemies. But he tells me I must. I don't want to pray for the people that persecute me and make fun of me. But that was his example. Someone makes me go a mile. I don't want to go another mile. I don't want to go a second mile with them. But he told me to. I don't want to let the sun go down on my wrath. But that was his direction. All those things that are the natural side of us doesn't want to do. We need the strength to overcome our own selfish wills, to be able to submit to him. And when we, when we offer our prayers and we hold on to those selfish little secret wants that we don't share with everybody, their own little secret wants about what we think we want, what we think we need, that's not submitting our wills either. It's not fully submitting to God's will. Another reason to be devoted in our prayer life can be found in Psalms chapter 25. Psalms chapter 25, I'm going to read verses 4 and 5 that says, "Show me thy ways, O Lord, teach me thy paths. Lead me in thy truth and teach me, for thou art my God, art the God of my salvation. On thee do I wait all the day." He asks us to lead him. That we want him to show us what we should do. We need help for what lies ahead. We need help. It's similar to there in James in the first chapter that we're very familiar with. Verse 5. "If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him." We need help for what lies ahead. We need wisdom. We have decisions that we face from time to time. Surgery. Do I have surgery or do I not have surgery? A job change. Moving. Financial problems. Having to confront someone else about something. I don't want to. But I'm supposed to, and I have to. We don't know what lies ahead. But we need help. And we need to be diligent in our prayers about it. Another reason to be devoted in our prayer life can be found in Psalms 139. We'll start with verse 1. O Lord, Thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my downsitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down and art acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, Thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before and laid Thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain unto it. He's saying he's surrounded with the Lord. You know, we were talking with the boys the other night, you know, and you know, if I say a prayer down there, do I say it in English or Spanish? Well, in English. The Lord speaks both. But beyond that, the Lord knows our thoughts before the words come out of our mouth. It's an unbroken, continual communication with God when we have that kind of relationship with Him. It is possible to have that. It's like there in Alma when he was talking about when you're not praying, your heart is drawn out to Him continually. It's the same thing as that. We're always thinking about Him. It's like a continuous little inner conversation with God all the time. If you want to be different, if you want to have peace and that sense of satisfaction, if you want to improve, I feel that we need to devote ourselves in our prayers to strengthen our prayer life. Well, how do we do that? There's a lot of ways. But it's like with everything else, it's a decision. And it starts with, you know, you start off giving, you know, every thought, every moment, taking that time to think about God. First thing we get out of bed in the morning, you reach over and you hit the alarm. What's the first thing you think of? Is it God? That's where we start. The first thing we wake up, spending some time and just that moment of today the Lord's given me. So He gave me another 24 hours. What am I going to do with it? You know, we spend a lot of our time waiting. We wait in line at the grocery store. We wait at red lights, at stop signs. There's lots of times when we're waiting. And each one of those is an opportunity to talk to God. I'm not a great multitasker, but I think I can talk to God and brush my teeth at the same time. It's continual. Our heart and our mind drawn out to Him. When we're at work or at school, you know, those moments where we sit and have a few moments of quiet, talk to God. It doesn't have to be formal. Just talk to Him. At the end of our day, we have some time, just let our minds settle on Him. As we drift off into sleep, what are we thinking about? Are we thinking about Him? Are we thinking about all the things we've got to do? It's possible. And it's there for us. And that's how we can grow. Setting aside some quiet time for scriptures, for a devotion, for some time that's just with you and God. That's where it starts. Keeping a running prayer list or a journal, a prayer journal. Write those things of your heart. Because when you write them, you remember them. You remember those people that need prayers. For me, if I'd have written down that I was going to call the Shaws, I might have had a better chance at it. That's the way our minds work. I want to turn back over to Alma 16 again. So be on page 431, 16th chapter of Alma, and I'm going to read verse 237. It says, "And now, my beloved brethren, I desire that you should remember these things, and that you should work out your salvation with fear before God, and that you should no more deny the coming of Christ, that you contend no more against the Holy Ghost, but that you receive it. And take upon you the name of Christ, that you humble yourselves even to the dust and worship God in whatsoever place you may be in spirit and in truth, that you may live in thanksgiving daily for the many mercies and blessings which He doth bestow upon you. Yea, and I would also exhort you, my brethren, that ye be watchful unto prayer continually, that ye may not be led away by the temptation of the devil, that he may not overpower you, that you may not become his subject at that last day, for behold, he rewardeth you no good thing. And now, my beloved brethren, I would exhort you to have patience, and that you bear with all manner of afflictions, that you do not revile against those that do cast you out because of your exceeding poverty, lest you become sinners like unto them, but that you have patience, and bear with those afflictions, and with a firm hope, that she shall one day rest from all your affliction." Living in thanksgiving daily. Being watchful unto prayer continually. It's the key. Worshiping God in whatsoever place you may be in. At school, at work, at the red light. In spirit and in truth. So I thank you for your time.
And brings us a message this evening. I know he will appreciate your kind attention, your silent prayers, as he brings us what is written on his mind and on his heart this evening. Brother Bob.
Can you hear me now? Yay. Sorry about that. Yes, I didn't turn it on. Good evening, though. It's good to see you all. And this is going to be a New Year's sermon. It's the first sermon of the year, so it seemed natural. And it's that time of year, that all the businesses, they go through their books, and they look and they... Sometimes they'll close for a day for inventory, and they'll count all the things they have on the stock on their shelves and look at their records and see, well, how many of these things did we sell and how many of those things didn't we sell, and And what are we going to do with all these leftover stuff? But they have to balance their books and get ready for the new year and try and project the things that they want to do differently and for their business. And it's also a good idea, I think, for us to do that occasionally in our spiritual life. Take a spiritual inventory of where we're at. It's easy sometimes to get into a rut, into a routine, where we do the same thing always because we've always done the same thing. And we get comfortable with that. And so there are times when we have to, I feel like it's wise for us to question, you know, where am I at spiritually? And what can I do differently? So I had some thoughts about some questions for us to ask ourselves to do a spiritual inventory. And, you know, a lot of times I stand up here and I'll ask a question and I'm expecting an answer. But these are, I'll be honest with you, these are probably going to be more of rhetorical questions for you to answer in your heart and in your mind. Because some of them are kind of weighty. They can't be answered with a quick yes or no. Because we're not talking about how many widgets did we sell or how many, you know, what are we going to do for our temporal existence. It's about spiritual things and important things. So the first thing that I feel like we should do is look back over the last year or two and kind of ask yourselves, well, how am I doing? Honestly. Sometimes it's like I said, we get busy and we start, you get so focused on, well, I got that done, but the next thing is right there and I got to work on that and that's the next thing and then I got to work on the thing after that. But we have to stop and take a breath and look at ourselves and ask ourselves, does God consider us a good and faithful servant? Can we look in the mirror and, you know, in the scriptures when it talks about that servant that's been working in the vineyard and the master has given him those talents and when he returns, those are the words that, well done, good and faithful servant, enter into your rest. Does God consider us that? You know, we know ourselves better than anyone else because we know our failures. We understand those things that others may not see. The thoughts of our mind, the struggles, the temptations that one person may have but the other person doesn't. And that's one of those hard things for us to do as humans because it requires some humility and some honest introspection and sometimes our pride gets in the way because we don't, it's work. It's hard to ask yourselves those questions. And we have to ask ourselves, does God consider me a good and faithful servant? Am I growing or am I stagnant? Can I look back over the last year and say, yeah, I think I'm spiritually stronger? Or do I look back and say, well, then I went another year, pretty much the same as the last three before that or ten before that. Nothing's really changed. You know, I think it's dangerous for us to become stagnant in our spiritual life. When we get into that comfort zone, we're in a routine and everything's just going along. And that's, you know, routines aren't bad. They help us remember things. But sometimes they take away the automaticity that's automatic about some things we do as opposed to taking the careful time to consider why we do them and having the real meaning behind it. Am I growing, or have I become stagnant? Am I just treading water? Am I just taking, you know, I got my space in the pew, it's all reserved, got my name on it, I sit there every Sunday. But am I growing? Is my time improved? Another thing we have to question is have I been a witness? You know, we when we get baptized, we make a promise to God that we're willing to stand as a witness at all times, in all places, in all things. Sometimes we have to ask ourselves, how have I done? Kind of look back at those times at work or at school that I was able to stand as a witness. The times in the grocery store when we have an opportunity standing next to somebody in line. We enter into conversation with them. Or, you know, just our daily interactions with the checkout person. Do we witness what God's done for us? How blessed we truly are. Have I been a good steward? You know, we've been given things. Have I taken good care of them? Have I taken good care of my time? It was interesting as I get this blog, internet, I guess it's kind of like a newsletter. Comes periodically, two or three times a week, and it's got different themes and different ideas in it. You know, just most of them are intended to, you know, improve your character or your walk. This last week had one. It was interesting, and the title of it was it was basically a little booklet that had been published in 1910. And the whole booklet was in this little blog. And it was how to live on 24 hours a day. We always, you know, and it was interesting because he took the concept of, you hear all these books about, well, I can live on $10 a day or all this time or all this monetary amount that you can live on. Well, I can make this $10 last this long. I can do this much with it. But it's the same concept with our time. Are you living 24 hours a day, or are we just existing? Have we just taken one day and pretty much not improved it? Not taken a part of that and said, how have I improved my spiritual walk? And gotten the best out of that. The biggest return on the investment of my time. You know, when the master gave the talents to his servants, you know, he expected them to use them and increase them. The thing about time is, it doesn't matter how much money you have or don't have, everybody has the same amount of time. It's really amazing. But do we use our time that improves our spiritual walk? Or do we just fill it with filler to entertain us, to keep us distracted so we don't have to think about all of the problems we have? Or do we take the most out of it? To get the most out of the time that we've been given. Have I been good steward of the talents and abilities that we've been given? We've all got different strengths and weaknesses. Have I been a good steward of those things? Have I used them for? Have I used my powers for good? You know, like the superheroes of the imagination of a lot of comic books. Well, I use my powers for good. Well, we have abilities and they're not the same. Do we use them for good, or do we use them for our own selfishness? For for our own gratification. Have I been a good steward of my treasure? The financial blessings that God's given us. You know, he expected from his servants an accounting of what he had given them. And, you know, have I taken what he's given me and have I used it for his benefit? Is the world changing me, or am I changing the world? And we all interact with the world. And, you know, and I'm speaking to some people who have some life experience. We were watching, Liza and I last night, watching a PBS documentary about the Dust Bowl. And it was, you know, it was interesting, but for the people that went through it, I can't imagine it. The eight years of dust storms that just destroyed everything. And they couldn't get a crop to grow. And, you know, what that did to the families, what it did to the towns, what it did to the people. And we look at the world today and it's changed so much from that time even. In the lifetimes of many of you here. But we have to make sure that the world, if it's changing for the worse, is it changing us too? Or am I trying to change the world that I interact with? Do I have a positive influence on those around me? Or are those around me influencing me? Am I being pulled down to the level of the world? Do I look and act the same as everyone around me, or am I different? You know, and it's one of those times when we can look and ask ourselves, well, what have I learned from my mistakes in the past? Because we've all made them. Can we look back and say, I've learned something from my mistakes? Or did I just endure them? And, you know, I hope I learned. Or sometimes I think we need to make a conscious effort to learn. To what have I learned? What have I learned about right or wrong? About people, about God? By making mistakes. And what am I doing now to avoid them? I know, and we look back, but at the same time, we have to look at our time right now that we're at and ask ourselves, what am I doing? What am I personally doing for God right now? Or am I done? Or I'll wait till I'm later. What am I doing right now? If we wait on someone else to do what God expects us to do, it may never get done when he's given us things to do. Do I support the work of the gospel? Not just financially. And not just in foreign lands. The work of the gospel is right here too. It's in this room. It's in our families. It's in those we interact with. It's in our work at school. That's where the work of the gospel is too. Do I know how to share my faith? Or is it something I know I'm supposed to do, but I don't really know how? And if I don't know how, what am I going to do to figure it out? What are my resources? Does fellowship of others in the world mean more to me than fellowship with God? You know, where is my relationship with God and my relationship with everyone else? Where is it? And you know what? We look at ourselves now, but we also have to look towards our future. Where do I want to be? Spiritually. What kind of a spiritual life do I want? What kind of blessings do I want from God? Where would I like to be spiritually next year at this time? Stronger? Closer to God? And not just individually, where we want our local to be spiritually a year from now. Well, and what are we going to do to get it there? Those are the kinds of things that, you know, are uncomfortable sometimes to think about because they don't come with a quick answer. But if we don't spend some time in thinking about them, and we finish up here and I get done and we visit after church, and then that's the last time it's thought of for a year. Whoever's preaching the first sermon of next year, 2015, scary to think about. It'll be here. Can be asking the same questions again. And have we just existed for another year? Or did we grow? There's lots of things in our spiritual life I think we can look at. But I would like to focus on one tonight. I think if we only do one thing over the coming year, that we should be able to devote more time in prayer and devote ourselves to it. You know, I think there's two kinds of prayer. There's a prayer where we get together or even by ourselves, and we kneel down and we close our eyes and bow our heads. And we utter words. And they come from our heart. Or or even silently in our minds. And we spend time in prayer that way. But I also think that there's part of us that can be poured out to God continually. A continual communion with Him. Conversation with Him. But, you know, in our lives, we're pretty busy. We have errands to run. We have work to do. We have kids to raise, children to beat, correct, children to feed, bills to pay. All those things happen in our life. And which is more likely in our life? Are we going to say no to doing something because it would cut into the time we've set aside for prayer? Or we'll skimp on the prayer side to go ahead and fit that into our day? How important do we make it? We've got a lot of things going on, so I'll have to keep my prayers just, you know, brief when I go to bed. And which is more likely in our life? Well, so why should we to be devoted in our prayer? Well, first of all, it's our duty. I'd like to turn to Alma chapter 16, very familiar scripture, I'm sure. This will be on page 429 if you're following along. It's our duty to be devoted in prayer. This is Amulek speaking to the Zoramites who had been kicked out of their synagogues because of their poverty. It says, therefore, I'm starting with verse 218. Therefore may God grant unto you, my brethren, that you might begin to exercise your faith unto repentance, and that you begin to call upon his holy name, that he would have mercy upon you. Yea, cry unto him for mercy, for he is mighty to save. Yea, humble yourselves, and continue in prayer unto him. Cry unto him when ye are in your fields, yea, over all your flocks. Cry unto him in your houses, yea, over all your household, both morning, midday, and evening. And I don't necessarily think that means we just got to do it three times a day. It's talking about all the time. Yea, cry unto him against the power of your enemies. Cry unto him against the devil, which is an enemy of all righteousness. Now, he covers a lot there about what we're supposed to pray over. Our work, our families, continually, and for his mercy and for his forgiveness. Continuing on, verse 220, cry unto him over the crops of your fields that ye may prosper in them. Cry over the flocks of your fields that they may increase. But this is not all. You must pour out your souls in your closets and your secret places and in your wilderness. And I like the phrase he uses, to pour out our souls, because it reminds me of Jay's sermon at the reunion when he talked about the high priest, when he made that sacrifice of the bullock or the ram, whatever it was, and he uses the knife and they pierced his heart of the animal. And the blood of the animal poured out onto the altar. You know, it was giving its life. It was giving everything. And you know, that's not the way that, you know, the law of Moses is fulfilled. But that same kind of imagery is what God expects spiritually from us. To pour out our hearts. To empty them, to lay them at his feet, without holding anything back, but just open it up to him. And when you do not cry unto the Lord, let your hearts be full, drawn out in prayer unto him continually for your welfare and for the welfare of those that are around you, for each other. We're all in this together. We're all in the battle. We're all fighting against the adversary. We gotta take care of each other. We're supposed to be helping each other. You know, this is one of the things that I feel that I am as weak as anybody else at. Last Sunday, I made a mental note. If you like me, my mental notes, I make them, and then I can't find them when I need them. But I couldn't help but notice that it's been a while since we've seen the Shaws in church. And I made a mental note. You know what? Monday I'm gonna call up Randy and Debbie and see how they're doing. Haven't heard them for a while. You know what? Monday got busy and I forgot. And then it was Wednesday night and I was sitting here, it's like, oh, I forgot. Thursday I'm gonna give them a call. Just touch base, just to see how, let them, because I want to communicate my love for them. you can probably imagine what happened. He got busy. Forgot. That's my weakness. That's my failure. But it's also a commandment that I need to work on. Because we are a strength for each other. We're supposed to be praying for the welfare of those that are around us. But getting back to, you know, devoting ourselves more in our prayer life, you know, why we do it? Because it's a commandment. It's our duty. It's what God expects of us. Now, you know, for one instance, Paul is brief and to the point when it comes to prayer. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 17, short and sweet, pray without ceasing. I don't think Paul ever said anything as succinct and to the point as that. But it's our duty to pray without ceasing. And that's hard because our mind gets full of other things. But we gotta take that effort to focus it. Another reason to be devoted in prayer, I believe, can be found in the book of Enos, in the Book of Mormon. It'll be on page 194. I'll just start with the first verse of the first chapter, the first and only chapter of Enos. It says, "Behold, it came to pass that I, Enos, knowing my father that he was a just man, for he taught me in his language and also in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, and blessed be the name of my God for it. And I will tell you of the wrestle which I had before God before that I received a remission of my sins. Behold, I went to hunt beasts in the forest, and the words which I had often heard my father speak concerning eternal life and the joy of the saints and the words of my father sunk deep into my heart. And my soul hungered. And I kneeled down before my Maker and cried unto Him in mighty prayer and supplication for mine own soul. And all the day long did I cry unto Him. Yea, and when the night came, I did still raise my voice high, that it reached the heavens. And there came a voice unto me, saying, Enos, thy sins are forgiven thee, and thou shalt be blessed." The reason we should be devoted in prayer is because God hears us and we need to hear from God. God hears our prayers, and there's a ton of scriptures that reference it. We don't do it out of routine. We do it out of a relationship. If I never spoke to Liza, what kind of a relationship would we have? Wouldn't be good. You know, God wants a relationship with us. It means we got to talk to Him so He can talk to us. If we're not talking to Him, there's no relationship. There's no communication. I want to also turn into Psalms, the 34th chapter. One of my more favorite Psalms, and I was reading it this afternoon, you know, trying to pick out, you know, those parts that I really wanted it to use it, but I couldn't help but I couldn't cut it down any. So I'm just going to read the whole thing. It says, verse 1, "I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord, and humble shall hear thee. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad. O magnify the Lord with me, and let us exalt His name together. I sought the Lord, and He heard me, and delivered me from all my fears. When we seek Him, He hears us and answers." They looked unto him and were lightened, and their faces were not ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. The angels of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. O fear the Lord, ye his saints, for there is no want to them that fear him. The young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek the Lord shall not want any good thing. Come, ye children, hearken unto me, and I will teach you the fear of the Lord. What man is he that desireth life and loveth many days, that he may see good? Keep thy tongue from evil, and thy lips from speaking guile. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears are open unto their cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. The righteous cry, and the Lord heareth, and delivereth them out of all their troubles. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such as be of a contrite spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth them out of them all. He keepeth all his bones, not one of them is broken. Evil shall slay the wicked, and they that hate the righteous shall be desolate. The Lord redeemeth the soul of his servants, and none of them that trust in him shall be desolate. Now, numerous times through that psalm, it talks about how the Lord's ears are open and he answers. And he wants to be there and to bless at all times. That's why we need to be devoted and diligent in our prayer life. Another reason to be devoted is found in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. I'll just start with the first verse again. It says, "Moreover, brethren, I would that you should not be ignorant, how that our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea." And this he's talking about the Israelites when they came out from Egypt. "And were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and the sea, and did all eat that same spiritual meat, and all did drink the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things were our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted, neither be ye idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and to drink, and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happened unto them for examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come." So he's going, all these things, all these people experienced the same things. They all experienced the manna. They all experienced walking through the Red Sea on dry ground. They experienced those things. But even with that, they were tempted by these things. They were all temptations. "Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. There hath no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will, with the temptation, also make a way of escape, that ye may be able to bear it. One of the reasons we need to pray is to have strength to endure our temptations. You know, it's a lot like being in a burning building. If you're in a burning building, well, or a structure that's on fire, a big commercial structure, what are you going to find almost anywhere in that structure is you know, the fire alarm's going off? What are you going to look around for? This isn't one of those rhetorical questions. An exit sign, just exactly like we got right there. They're required to have them, right? Now, is that exit sign helping me if I don't do anything about it? Nope. We can be in the middle of a temptation and say, Lord, I'm tempted. Help me find a way out. And it's like being in that burning building and we're about to get hurt. And Lord, help me. Oh, there's an exit sign. All I got to do is walk out that exit. But I still have to choose to walk out that exit. And it's just like that. It says right there in the 13th verse. You will not, with the temptation, also make a way to escape. There is a way out of it. And not every temptation comes with a warning label. You know, sometimes we're in the situation before we realize it. But when we realize it, we still have to be in a position to be talking to our God, to recognize it. Another reason to be diligent in our prayer life, to be devoted, can be found in Matthew chapter 26. I'll start with the 36th verse. So then cometh Jesus with them into a place called Gethsemane, and saith unto the disciples, Sit ye here while I go and pray yonder. And he took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and began to be sorrowful and very heavy. Then saith he unto them, My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death. Tarry ye here and watch with me. And he went a little farther and fell on his face and prayed, saying, Now, that's an important illustration. He fell on his face. He's admitting how heavy he feels, how sorrowful, to the point of just of collapse. Oh, my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt. There in the 42nd verse, it's similar, but it says, You know, O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me, except I drink it, thy will be done. We have to overcome our own wills. You know, right there it's telling us that Jesus didn't necessarily want to go to the cross. He knew what it was going to be like. Humanly speaking, he did not want that, but he was willing to submit his will. For me, naturally, I don't want to do some of the things that God tells me to do. I don't want to turn the other cheek. But he commands me to. I don't want to love my enemies. But he tells me I must. I don't want to pray for the people that persecute me and make fun of me. But that was his example. Someone makes me go a mile. I don't want to go another mile. I don't want to go a second mile with him. But he told me to. I don't want to let the sun go down on my wrath. But that was his direction. All those things that are the natural side of us doesn't want to do. We need the strength to overcome our own selfish wills, to be able to submit to him. And when we, you know, when we offer our prayers and we hold on to those selfish little secret wants that we don't share with everybody, their own little secret wants about what we think we want, what we think we need, that's not submitting our wills either. It's not fully submitting to God's will. Another reason to be devoted in our prayer life can be found in Psalms chapter 25. Psalms chapter 25, I'm going to read verses 4 and 5. It says, "Show me thy ways, O Lord. Teach me thy paths. Lead me in thy truth and teach me, for thou art my God, art the God of my salvation. On thee do I wait all the day." He asks us to lead him. You know, that we want him to show us what we should do. We need help for what lies ahead. We need help. It's similar to there in James in the first chapter that we're very familiar with. Verse 5. "If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him." We need help for what lies ahead. We need wisdom. We have decisions that we face from time to time. Surgery. Do I have surgery or do I not have surgery? A job change. Moving. Financial problems. Having to confront someone else about something. I don't want to. But I'm supposed to, and I have to. We don't know what lies ahead, but we need help. We need to be diligent in our prayers about it. Another reason to be devoted in our prayer life can be found in Psalms 139. We'll start with verse 1. "O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my down-sitting and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down and art acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before and laid thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain unto it." He's saying he's surrounded with the Lord. You know, we were talking with the boys the other night, you know, and you know, if I say a prayer down there, do I say it in English or Spanish? Well, and English. The Lord speaks both. But beyond that, the Lord knows our thoughts before the words come out of our mouth. It's an unbroken, continual communication with God when we have that kind of relationship with Him. It is possible to have that. It's like there in Alma when he was talking about, when you're not praying, your heart is drawn out to Him continually. It's the same thing, is that we're always thinking about Him. It's like a continuous little inner conversation with God all the time. If you want to be different, if you want to have peace and that sense of satisfaction, if you want to improve, I feel that we need to devote ourselves in our prayers to strengthen our prayer life. Well, how do we do that? There's a lot of ways. But it's like with everything else, it's a decision. And it starts with, you know, you start off giving, you know, every thought, every moment, taking that time to think about God. First thing we get out of bed in the morning, you reach over and you hit the alarm. What's the first thing you think of? Is it God? That's where we start. The first thing when we wake up, spending some time and just that moment of today the Lord's given me. So give me another 24 hours. What am I going to do with it? You know, we spend a lot of our time waiting. We wait in line at the grocery store. We wait at red lights, at stop signs. There's lots of times when we're waiting. And each one of those is an opportunity to talk to God. I'm not a great multitasker, but I think I can talk to God and brush my teeth at the same time. It's continual. Our heart and our mind drawn out to Him. When we're at work or at school, you know, those moments where we can, when we sit and have a few moments of quiet, talk to God. Doesn't have to be formal. Just talk to Him. At the end of our day, do we have some time? Just let our minds settle on Him. As we drift off into sleep, what are we thinking about? Are we thinking about Him? Are we thinking about all the things we've got to do? It's possible. And it's there for us. And that's how we can grow. Setting aside some quiet time for scriptures, for a devotion, for some time that's just with you and God. That's where it starts. Keeping a running prayer list or a journal, a prayer journal. Write those things of your heart. Because when you write them, you remember them. You remember those people that need prayers. For me, if I'd have written down that I was going to call the Shaws, I might have had a better chance at it. That's the way our minds work. I want to turn back over into Alma 16 again. This will be on page 431, 16th chapter of Alma, and I'm going to read verse 237. It says, "And now, my beloved brethren, I desire that you should remember these things, and that you should work out your salvation with fear before God, and that you should no more deny the coming of Christ, that you contend no more against the Holy Ghost, but that you receive it, and take upon you the name of Christ, that you humble yourselves even to the dust and worship God in whatsoever place you may be in spirit and in truth, that you may live in thanksgiving daily for the many mercies and blessings which he doth bestow upon you. Yea, and I would also exhort you, my brethren, that ye be watchful unto prayer continually, that ye may not be led away by the temptation of the devil, that he may not overpower you, that ye may not become his subjects at that last day, for behold, he rewardeth you no good thing. And now, my beloved brethren, I would exhort you to have patience, and that you bear with all manner of afflictions, that you do not revile against those that do cast you out because of your exceeding poverty, lest you become sinners like unto them, but that you have patience, and bear with those afflictions, and with a firm hope that you shall one day rest from all your affliction." Living in thanksgiving daily, being watchful unto prayer continually, it's a key. Worshiping God in whatsoever place you may be in, at school, at work, at the red light, in spirit and in truth. So I thank you for your time.